TBQ. All right, good morning, everybody. This is Jim Mazzetti, and welcome to the American Dream. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11, interviewing the best, the brightest, the most courageous entrepreneurs of Orange County. Today is no different. Again, this is Jim Mazzetti. This show is sponsored each and every week by Miles Wealth Management, which I am a proud member of. And just as a reminder to everybody, the opinions of myself and my guests are truly our opinions and not necessarily the opinions of WTBQ or Miles Wealth Management, which my guest right next to me will appreciate every one of those disclosures here. And we're just happy to do this each and every week to interview entrepreneurs that get up every morning, make it happen not only for themselves, but their community and their families. And today's a very special treat for me. I've known this gentleman, God, we just figured this out today, over the better of 20 years, which I can't believe I've done anything for like 20 years. And been a true friend and a huge supporter, believe it or not, of Orange County and Warwick especially, but very much in the wings. Doesn't like to be in front of the camera nor behind the mic, but he's doing both of these today. So good morning, Steve. Welcome.
Good morning, Jim. You're coaxing me in front of the microphone today.
Absolutely. And I knew you'd be great at this, by the way.
Well, let's not jump to any conclusions yet.
That's right. We're only a minute into the show.
That's right.
But it'll all be good. So Stephen J. Spiegel, as his wife likes to refer to him.
When she's annoyed at
him. Yeah, with all those names, right?
Right. All the names come out.
That's probably just the last of them.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
Well, Steve actually is a, believe it or not, an attorney, lawyer, and all those other acronyms that go along with this. But I have never really thought of him as a lawyer. Don't take the offense at that, Steve.
No, I don't think of myself as a lawyer much either,
no.
Jim, unless I'm before a judge.
And I have to put that hand up. Steve is much more an attorney, and he is actually a true entrepreneur in every sense of the word. And I mean that nobody, you know, a lot of people, Steve, don't think about attorneys as being entrepreneurs. But you know, most attorneys, or at least self-practitioners, are entrepreneurs. They get up every day. There's no guarantee of a salary, no guarantee of a client walking in the door.
That's true.
Right?
That's
and
true.
They got to figure it out like anybody else every day.
That's true. Yeah. Self-employment is a form of entrepreneurial activity, although it's a little bit different form than, especially where, if for an attorney, there is a business model that's out there for the way an attorney can conduct their practice. Most attorneys tend to adopt business models that other attorneys adopt. Although I don't think that's necessarily that is something that they need to do. There's a lot of different ways to practice law, just like there are a lot of different ways to run a restaurant or a lot of different ways to have a manufacturing facility. You can put your own individual stamp on it and create new niches in a marketplace based on the way that you develop a business model. And I think I've done that as a lawyer. I don't think I have a common garden variety law practice.
No, you don't have a stereotypical design as most, you know, people view attorneys when they, you know, and I think a lot of it, you know, for our listeners out there, you know, every time we think, most people, when they think about an attorney, they think of attorney to help them purchase their house. That's generally their first run in with them, or design. And then, you know, second times, if they are self-employed, they you know, hire an attorney to help set them up properly. And we'll get into that a little later in the show. But Steve, you know, do me a favor, if you would give us a little background on yourself. I mean, and I know this well, but you know, most people that don't know you don't realize, you know, where you went to school, which I think is extremely impressive. And a lot of this stuff has actually helped you where you are today on your author side of it.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Although you're making me blush, Jim.
Which we'll have, actually, we do have on camera, so we'll send it to your family here. But you know, you went to Brown.
I went to Brown undergraduate. Actually, I'm I grew up in Poughkeepsie, New York, and went to Brown University. I kind of fell in love with the school when I visited it. It's a very open-minded school, very interdisciplinary, which I still think is kind of my approach to. I look at a big holistic picture. And I don't really say, well, I'm limited to looking at these particular legal issues or this particular business issues. You really have to put everything into its larger context. And I think Brown was a good education for that.
Much more of a free thinking design.
Very much of a free thinking place. I liked the fact that there were no distribution requirements. So you could really go and concentrate on what you want to learn. And the idea was people don't really learn very well when there's a gun to their head.
Right.
Learning is something that has to be self-motivated. And there were a lot of very self-motivated people at Brown. And, you know, I can't say enough nice things about Brown University.
It's interesting you say that. Not so there wasn't really, were there core classes that you mandated, or it was much different than...
No, core classes.
I didn't know that.
No core classes whatsoever. You could, you know, if you wanted to eat, and if you wanted to take a course that really was outside of your, not just your major, but really kind of outside your comfort zone, but you really want to learn something, Brown offered pass-fail options, and it actually was called satisfactory no credit. And if you didn't pass the class, at least when I went there, they may have changed it since, Jim.
It's a few years ago.
It is more than a few years ago. You didn't get credit for the course if you failed it, and it never even went on your transcript. And the idea was to promote kind of intellectual adventurism, so that take the class. Don't worry about the grade you're going to get. If you think you want to learn about, you know, physics and you're an English literature major, then go, by all means, go and take a class in physics, and don't worry about that it's going to pull down your GPA average and you're not going to get into the, you know, master's program of your choice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What a different, you know, I hate to say it, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but you and I are famous for that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So warn all our
yeah.
listeners right now
yeah.
that Steve and I are known to go off in a whole different area here, but...
Jim's reminded me to treat this as a cup of coffee conversation,
yeah,
which he and I could have a cup of coffee and it lasts for an hour, easy.
Easy. Right. It might be a pot of coffee by the time
right,
we're done.
Right, that's right.
So Brown was the beginning, and it kind of set your baseline for the open-minded thinking and creativity, quite frankly, that I know you for.
That's right, which is, I really do think, if I have to say what's my stock in trade, it's really, I take a very creative approach to everything that I do. Really try to think about problems holistically and try to solve them for people. And that, more than any one, you know, legal description, is how I would, what I think I do.
I think that sums you up pretty good.
Yeah.
You're the antithesis of boilerplate.
Oh, no. In fact, I don't think, and some attorneys have criticized me for this. I mean, I read the boilerplate.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't really apply, then why is it in a document? Instead of just saying, oh, no, we need this document for this transaction. And, you know, we can get into the rest of the training if that's what you want to do. But I was actually trained to think that way. You know, look at a document, really understand what it's saying, and learn how to write up the sections that you need and express the issues that need to be expressed.
Right.
So that's not boilerplate.
No.
Ever.
And it's funny,
never
so
is.
Kind of fast forward us into, from Brown, then you went to Columbia.
Yeah, I went to Columbia Law School. Yes.
Which, you know, and Steve is we're going to get this again, he's an amazing writer. But knowing you for as long as I do, I mean, that you ended up on the being the Law Journal, were you not?
No. Actually, no? I had an opportunity to be on the Law Journal, but again, in my free thinking ways, I thought about it. I don't really consider myself just kind of pursuing intellectual pursuits for their own joy. Again, not that there's anything wrong with that,
right?
But I was much more practical, much more hands on. I know it's a show about entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial activity, and that was always my approach. So I made a decision not to go on the Law Journal,
okay.
But I distinguished myself other ways. I was a Harlan Fiske Stone Scholar all 3 years I was there, which kind of puts me at the top, depending on the year, top 5%, top 15% of the class.
Wow.
And again, I don't have an opportunity to talk about that much, and not that I really want to talk about it at all. I don't really think, you know, awards can kind of, those types of awards can indicate levels of achievement, but you know what really counts is what are you doing today.
Correct. And you know, you hit the nail on the head with that. We're going to take a quick break. This is Jim Mazzetti. Welcome to the American Dream. I'm my guest today is Stephen J. Spiegel from Spiegel Legal. We'll be right back after this.
If you're a small business owner, no one has to tell you that your business is one of the largest assets you possess. But have you ever taken the time to know what it's worth? Business valuation is not only critical for growing your company, but ultimately its eventual sale. At Miles Wealth Management, they can help you determine the value of your business through a simple yet comprehensive process that doesn't take months and cost thousands of dollars. For many years, Miles has provided you with insurance and financial services. Now they can help you ensure the growth and stability of your business for years to come. Call them today at 845-651-3070 for a free consultation, or visit them online at mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located on North Main Street in the Village of Florida. Miles Wealth Management, LLC, is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signature Investors Incorporated and any subsidiaries or affiliates.
Hi, this is your friendly farming family physician, Dr. Nathan Johnson from Crystal Run Healthcare. Join me and my wife, Irisha,
every Tuesday from noon to 1 on Road to Liberty, where we will focus on family matters and healthy habits on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
Hi, this is Walt Baby Love, host of Gospel Tracks, heard right here on WTBQ every Sunday morning at 6 a.m. Musical guests, the best inspirational messages to get you through the week, and much, much more with Walt Baby Love. WTBQ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Jim Mazzetti, and this is The American Dream. Remember, we're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11. And, you know, just kind of remind everybody, this show is about entrepreneurs of Orange County, which are the, you know, probably the most courageous people I've ever met, and I get to interview each and every week. The show is sponsored by Miles Wealth Management, which I am lucky to be a member of, and they keep me alive, make sure I pay my bills, and take care of my kids, and I take care of my clients and everything else. I'm lucky enough to have a very, very good friend of mine, Steven Spiegel, today, joining me as my guest, who I've known for... Excuse me, my goof here. My chair's all goofy, as usual. I've known Steve for about 20 years here, and we're just kind of bring people up to speed. We're just going through, you know, where Steve came from as far as education goes, and he is a Poughkeepsie boy, as we laugh about that all the time. Steve, I grew up in, and we joke.
I've been in Warwick for 30 years now. So,
I know.
Yeah,
you're almost a Warwickian.
I don't know about that. I was talking to a fellow the other day who told me I'm not quite a local yet.
Really?
Yeah. He's a good friend.
Yeah, well, I think it takes a better of like 60 years and three generations or something
like that. Yeah, I got a late start.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing. Listen, you're here. But, you know, let's get into that. You obviously came up, went through Columbia Law School. And then your next stop along the way was this little known firm.
Yeah, well, it's not, you know, up here it's not quite as widely known, but in New York City and really internationally and on Wall Street, it's a very well-known law firm. It's called Skadden Arps. And that's really where I cut my teeth and I got my training. And Skadden Arps is kind of known for almost creating the legal merger and acquisition business. I know Joe Flom, who was really, really one of the great corporate lawyers of the 20th century. He was actually written up about in one of Malcolm Gladwell's books, Outliers. Because of really kind of the changes that he brought to Wall Street and the business world. So I worked on lots of very large mergers and acquisitions and commercial real estate transactions, really covering a wide variety of industries there. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth. And you talk about not really being a lawyer. I remember my mentor there, who was on the management committee at the time, he took me aside one day and he said, look, I hear great things about you, but you have a decision to make. Do you want to be a lawyer or do you want to be a deal maker? And at Skadden, they really looked at things as deal makers get things done. Lawyers are trained to just assess risk. And there's nothing wrong with assessing risk, but if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to be taking risks. You can't avoid risks. It's not, if you're risk averse, it's really not entrepreneurial lifestyle is really not for you. That's my opinion.
No, you're dead on. And you know, it's the thing we go through each and every week. And this is not being an entrepreneur is not the easy road.
No, it's definitely not the easy road, and you learn to accept certain risks. In fact, you know, most entrepreneurs come to thrive with those risks. There's a certain thrill that goes along with that. And that's why if you're really going to get deals done, you've got to say, well, this is a risk that is going to be taken, is worth taking. But then other risks really are not worth taking. And that's kind of the evaluation process in getting a deal done. It's not taking a risk that...
uncalculated risk.
Exactly. It's right. Taking calculated risks. So.
Right. It's not throwing caution to the air and saying, hey, I'm going to do this with all disregard for what may happen. I mean, true entrepreneurs, you know, takes a deep look inside themselves and deep thought putting this whole plan together. And then making the jump.
Absolutely.
Right?
Then absolutely. The jump. And that doesn't mean that they're calm about it sometimes. It can be very nervous. People handle those things differently.
Oh, my goodness. No kidding.
There's no doubt if you're going to go and be an entrepreneur, you have to take certain risks and you have to learn to accept them. I've known people who have taken entrepreneurial risks and then really say, you know what, this is not for me. And that's great. I mean, that's just knowing yourself better, which is, I think, the object of life.
In general. Right. And I think you hit a big point here is that, you know, it's better to try and fail than never to try.
Absolutely. I look back, and as I think most entrepreneurs do, and some of the things that I failed at, I learned the most from and really made me into a better person and a better entrepreneur.
Right, and better businessman in general.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, we tend to look at things not with a much, not, I wouldn't say much more critical eye, but I think a more educated.
Yes. Eye,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, absolutely. The more you go, you can go and say you can assess risks better. You can assess deals better, people better, transactions better. Kind of even see where they're going to go a lot easier. The more experience you have.
And there's no exception.
There's no exception. No, I mean,
and you can't get it in school. I don't care if you went to Brown or Columbia.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And you know, what I see sometimes is I have had, you know, been blessed over the years with a lot of very successful young entrepreneurs. And the thing I have to caution them about is that, listen, even if you hit a home run right outside the gate,
right,
that's wonderful, but don't make the mistake of thinking that you're going to do it the next time.
Or that you're done.
Right.
Right. Because success, one thing I see myself, and you've done it, I work with a lot of businessmen each and every day, is that, you know, it takes just as much effort and activity to keep up with your success.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, activity. You can't just sit there, okay, I did it, I'm good, and sit back, because it'll sneak up on you.
Absolutely. I think I'm at a stage where I'm really trying. I'm very, you know, I've gotten involved personally with a lot of entrepreneurial projects over the years, and I'm really much more of a, no, let's pick and choose, let's really cut back. It's not about the hunt of the deal as it once was for me.
Right.
It's much more about how does this fit into my life and what I want out of it. And I really think that's a very personal question. And there's no blanket ways to approach life.
There's no manual.
Right. No manual. Life. Right. Right.
We said about raising our children. There's no manual for that either.
But yeah. No.
This
right.
is equally right. as challenging.
Right.
Say, if not more challenging, for say the least. But you're right. I mean, if you're gonna
not
do
the
it,
kids can't be an awful
God,
challenge.
They never stop.
No. No. No.
And we don't care how old they are. My dad still warns me. He goes, you know, you're still my biggest kid.
Right. Exactly.
Which I will continue to, Dad. Trust me. Uh-huh. I'm never gonna let you down with that one. But you know, kind of brings us, you know, SCAD and ARPS, and then all of a sudden, Steve, you and I've known you again for long, but for our listeners, all of a sudden there was something in you that made you say, you know what, I'm done with the corporate world, I'm going to give this a shot on my own.
Yeah, I think what I liked about a place like Skadden, and I still have friends there, and I still am a big fan of the place, but I love the deals. I love the they worked on, I mean, really tremendous deals. But what I didn't like about it was the kind of the politics and the corporate hierarchy.
Okay.
There was actually a particular incident, but that really made me think, you know what? I want to be more devoted to my clients. I don't really want to just fight in a political hierarchy and move up a ladder. And I know I was, they wanted me to, in fact, I moved out to Los Angeles for a year, because that they, there was a huge opportunity. We were opening an LA office.
I forgot about that.
And, I spent time in LA. I thought that was a really valuable, I worked on a range of deals that I would never have worked on before. And actually, I don't know if I think I told this story a while back. I don't tell this much, but, at the time, I was looking for a new kind of entrepreneurial legal type of activity, and I was once a very big Allman Brothers fan, and I wound up meeting through a, you know, if there's such a thing as coincidence in life, which I'm not sure there is, by the way, that's a different, deeper topic.
Yeah.
But I wound up becoming friends with the fellow who was at the time the lawyer and the manager of the Allman Brothers, who had gone on, the band had gone on hiatus and came back. And he was an entrepreneur who wound up getting involved in a comic book venture, had venture capital behind it, Allen & Company, actually, if for any listeners that know, which is really one of the great media investment banks of around.
Really? Okay.
He had done the financing for that. And they went, they wanted to start a comic book company. He had the former creative head of Marvel Comics was one of the partners, another senior executive of Time Warner at the time. They had venture capital, and he wanted me to come on board and take over really the Allman Brothers legal business and some of his other clients, work with him on it, so he could keep his practice going while he was pursuing this venture. I actually accepted the offer. Turns out that he made me promises of he really hadn't checked with the venture capitalists to do.
And he had to making promises his body couldn't keep.
Absolutely, yeah. And he had to wind back the offer. He was very disappointed. But just the thought process of saying, "Hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to now be the Allman Brothers lawyer," which was would have been a childhood dream. It forced me to go and say, okay, really, what's next for me?
Right.
I wasn't long at Skadden after that.
No. Well, listen, it, with that, we're going to take a quick break before we get into where you came to and where you are now. This is Jim Mazzetti. This is the American Dream. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mike, I have good news and bad news. Good news is my son just got accepted to college.
Hey, congratulations, Bill. That's great news. What's the bad news?
We don't have enough money for his college education. I don't know how I'm going to tell him that we can't afford to pay all 4 years.
Listen, call the people at Miles Wealth Management. They helped me with my financial planning, and now I can afford my son's entire college tuition. To tell you the truth, for the first time in my life, I feel like I'm truly financially secure.
That's exactly what I need. Now, how do I get in touch with these guys?
You can call them at 845-651-3070, and their website is mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located right in the Village of Florida.
I'm calling them as we speak.
Miles Wealth Management, LLC is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signature Investors, Inc., and any subsidiaries or affiliates.
Hi, this is Austin DuBois of Bluestein Shapiro, Rich and Barone. Tune in every Friday at 10 a.m. for It's the Law. I'll be talking about how the law can help you. That's every Friday at 10 a.m. on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
This is Sister Anna. Listen to The Garden of the Child, a story discussion time with students. Story develops listening skills and imagination. Saturdays at 11:10 a.m. on WTBQ.
WTBQ weather.
We have cloudy skies this morning. There's a little freezing drizzle possibility, and then a few periods of drizzle during the day as it warms into the upper 30s, and maybe a shower later on. Then tonight, there could be an early shower flurry, then lows drop off into the upper 20s to near 30 under cloudy skies. Tomorrow, look for clouds and a passing flurry. It'll be breezy and heading into the upper 30s. Clear colder tomorrow night, 15 to 20, and sunshine for Thursday with a high in the lower 30s. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Tony Salimo.
WTBQ.
We're back. This is Jim Mazzetti, and welcome. This is The American Dream. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11, interviewing the biggest, the brightest, and most courageous entrepreneurs in Orange County, and today is no exception. I have my dear friend, and I say that with all sincerity, Steven Spiegel from Spiegel Legal joining me today on this broadcast, and it's actually a huge treat for me because Steve and I have known each other for a better of 20 years, and he's been my personal attorney for many deals, quite frankly, and I can say this, and I'm going to say it live, and it's now being recorded. You know, I couldn't have done what I did in my life and my professional career without your assistance.
Well, thank you, Jim.
It's been, and I tell you, and they were some rides, by the way. They were some rides. They were not your stereotypical closing by any stretch of the imagination.
Your ski mountain was in and of itself quite a ride, and that's only one of many.
It's only one of many, but that was the best one so far.
So far.
But see, we left off. We went through the whole education, and we were kind of talking off air. You know, there's so much to being an entrepreneur that just can't. I don't think words can sum up in just one phrase, one tagline, one cliche, because it's. I think it's. And you were kind of. It's different for each and every one of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And I think the neat thing is that. Actually, talk back to this is the greatest country in the world because we can actually even do that.
That's right.
Right. And we're here. We're lucky it's our obligation to. It's not a rehearsal, folks. So if you're going to do it and you're thinking about doing it, make the jump. Jump in with both feet and take advantage of your enjoy your life because we don't get another one. And it kind of brings me to another piece here. Steve, you've done so many deals. You've had an amazing background. And besides the fact you're a fantastic father, and I know your three children, and you have a fantastic wife, which is a great support system, which I talk about quite a bit. If you're an entrepreneur, you better have a support system.
Oh, my wife Jane has stood by me for 30 years, and we've gone through ups and downs, as everyone does in their life. No one gets out of this life alive, as they say.
True.
And not all of the rides have been fun ones. Although I look back, as I think I said earlier, some of the failures were really taught me more than any of the successes could possibly, and really are the memories that I cherish the most in an odd way.
You know, you're right, because those are the true challenges of life.
Absolutely,
they're great lessons.
They teach you, I think, how you deal with your failures and the bumps in the road are really what determine your character, I believe. I don't think that easy successes really don't teach you much about yourself. They don't really strengthen your character. And again, I love easy successes. I'm not knocking.
God,
easy
would I
successes.
Take them? Right, we both take them if we could. But they're not easy, And I think it's important to fail. And I think I wish more of our society, quite frankly, wouldn't just hand out awards just for participation. And because we don't teach anybody anything with those type of designs. And we talk about it, I don't care what college education you have and what pedigree you may have, there is no degree that you can get that's going to teach you how to run a business.
No, absolutely not. And the truth is that, I mean, the education is essential for being an attorney. I couldn't have gotten, passed the bar exam and practiced law without the education. The formal education, but Mark Twain once said, "I never let schooling get in the way of my education," and I'm a big believer in that. And truly, some of the most successful entrepreneurs that I've ever represented really are folks that really didn't make it through college. In some cases, didn't make it through high school, and they just were burning with passion to go and build a business. And we're very, very successful about it. And most of those folks I tend to meet when they're in a position to then expand their business or sell their business. They work hard. They rely on gut instinct. And it's really not about an intellectual exercise. Right. That being said, listen, I also have represented over the years people that have very advanced degrees, scientific degrees, mathematical degrees. They do need that level of education for the particular technological
business
entrepreneurial pursuit that they're going after. But there's really no one formula.
I was going to say, I think there's no set recipe for an entrepreneur.
No, and I think ultimately people have to do what they feel comfortable, what they feel challenged to do.
What gets them up every morning?
Absolutely. Right?
What drives you?
Absolutely. And I do think it's important that it's a nice feeling to go and wake up in the morning knowing that you have things that you want to accomplish and that you have a day to try to get those things done in. And as opposed to going and having an alarm wake you up and going and saying, I don't want to go to work today. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of days I don't really want to get up and you know, I'd rather linger in bed too.
Can we call it a snow day and not go in?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you know, it kind of...
Nothing wrong with that either.
Oh, every once in a while you have to pull a snow day.
Absolutely. And right. you need to give yourself space, I believe.
You know, going to that, I mean, Steve, you were, and we've known, again, we kind of harp on this, but we've known each other for such a long time. And there was a time where I knew, and you still do it. I always call him, you know, the frustrated college student because he'll pull all these all-nighters trying to getting a deal done and so on and so forth. But there was and I want to bring this up to his listeners because this is really important. The, you know, there was a time though when a not so fun occasion came about, and I remember being there with you. That when you got that phone call and it wasn't good news and we had to talk about it and it kind of changed things, but it didn't change you as an entrepreneur. And we'll bring it up.
Are you talking about my lung cancer?
When the lung cancer was when you found out you had lung cancer.
Yeah.
And that was a pivotal moment. Obviously.
That was really. I know it may sound odd to listeners, but that. Having lung cancer, my experience was one of the great blessings in my life. I didn't think so at the time. And I look back and remember I was going in for a routine hernia surgery that I had been putting off for years.
I remember like yesterday.
And actually locally, it was back at the old Arden Hill Hospital up in Goshen. And my physician at the time, who's a terrific doctor named Tony Martini, a local doctor.
That's right.
He called me up and he said, Steve, I don't want to alarm you, but I there's an abnormality in your chest x-ray. And next thing I know, I'm being CAT scanned and I'm being told about 5-year survival rates, that it may be in my liver as well as my lung. And I wound up, I had a terrific surgeon at Memorial Sloan Kettering in the city, a fellow named Dr. Manjit Baines, who I had the privilege of seeing recently for my annual checkup. I've been CAT scanned so many times, I probably glow by now, Jim. CAT scan, PET scan, MRI,
everything, right?
X-ray. It does, it at least for me, it really taught me a lot about who I am, what I want in this life, what's important to me. For me, at least, it was a wake-up call about how do I really want to spend this life? What's really important? What do I still want to accomplish? And it did, it was a life-changing experience for me. I think I didn't change me who I was. I think it just accelerated who I wanted to become, if that makes any sense.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
And I still wound up going. I'm actually, after that, I wound up getting involved with some other local entrepreneurial organizations. There was an organization called Orange County Capital Development Corporation, which isn't around anymore, but it had really some of the... I still have some very, very dear friends from those days, and got involved with trying to provide venture capital to Orange County businesses, and then got involved with some more general Hudson Valley entrepreneurial business facilitation groups. It caused me to write after that. I've become an
That's
avid
right.
writer since then.
And an author, which we'll actually get into in a little bit. Actually, we should talk about it. But, you know, all those, you know, I love how you point this out for others listening. You didn't let the news of having cancer say, oh, woe is me. And I think I love how you categorize it saying, listen, it didn't take me down or slow me down. It accelerated because you obviously right there and then go, listen, life isn't forever.
No, it's going and confronting your mortality really puts things in perspective, because you don't, none of us know if today is our last day on the planet.
Regardless of diagnosis.
Regardless of diagnosis.
Right.
I mean, it sounds cliche, but, you know, we could leave the studio today and get hit by a bus.
Right.
You don't know. And you just don't know. And so really the question for me became, you know, am I living the kind of life that I wanted to live? Because it's really too easy to go and let, you know, there's nothing wrong with putting in your time and, you know, paying your dues, as the old expression goes, because
right.
sometimes you have to go. I mean, I couldn't be a lawyer now if I didn't go to law school, and it wasn't...
And put your time in.
Right. I had to put my time in, but it was towards a goal of what do I want to do? What do I want to accomplish? I think that those questions of what you want to become and what's important to you. And again, I don't think it's a very, very different answer for different people.
Right. But one you have to answer.
Absolutely. I think we're put on this earth. Again, this is an entrepreneurial radio hour, not a spiritual radio hour, but
I think they're one and the same, by the way.
I do think you're right.
I think they're one and the same.
I do think you're right. But really going and assessing what your purpose in life is, what meaning do you want to derive out of life, I think that's what we're all here to try to figure out. And the answers are so unique and so individualized.
Right. They're not textbook.
No, it's not textbook. And sometimes, you know, and again, I found it's very rewarding to me. You know, I've had people who I've done things for, you know, got transactions, helped them through a jam with something. And then years later, they come back and say, look, you have no idea the impact you've had on my life. And that's a real rewarding thing, because I do think, and I know you share the same philosophy, it really is about helping other people.
It's not the monetary side.
Yeah. And frankly, most entrepreneurs, while money may be a way to keep score in certain ways, and it is kind of the way our society measures success, I think most entrepreneurs that I've ever met, they're not motivated by the money. They're motivated more by a project, the goal, an objective, a task that they want to get done,
right,
to prove that they can do it, to accomplish something that other people have not been able to accomplish, and I think that that's what drives most entrepreneurs, and I know it drives me.
No, I think you're dead on. I mean, and that's the one thing we get. I'm so lucky; I get to interview each and every week, and it's a common theme, Steve. It really is among entrepreneurs, is that, you know, you're almost an explorer.
Well, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Really, that exploration is, I love that. I love that metaphor.
Yeah, because each and every day is a new adventure, a new exploratory, whether it's in looking for business or within yourself. But it's what drives you, gets you up every morning. I mean, and that's what it's about. I mean, I know it for me personally. It's like, you know, listen, I don't know. It's my day is never routine. I mean, I'm sure, I know yours is never
routine. No days to me, no day is alike. And sometimes what you think you're going to accomplish with the day
can be
is
so
not
far from
the day. Right, that's not where the day takes you.
Right.
And I think that joy of discovery and exploration, if that's what it makes you tick, you learn to love that. You know,
you get bored if you don't.
Right.
You know, everybody says, you know, once you, and you know, we talked about the hunt before, right?
Right.
That is the drive of most entrepreneurs. It's when they get that goal, quite frankly,
lock on to something, and it's just, you feel really kind of at one with what you're doing. And from a philosophical perspective, there's no more subject and object. You're just doing.
Right.
And and that's why it is the thrill of the hunt. Your senses are keen. You're noticing everything around you in pursuit of your goal, you know. And I do think that that's a very good metaphor for the entrepreneurial process.
Yeah, we're going to leave it right that. This is Jim Mazzetti. This is The American Dream. I'm here being my co-host today with Steven Spiegel from Spiegel Legal. We'll be right back after this.
If you're a small business owner, no one has to tell you that your business is one of the largest assets you possess. But have you ever taken the time to know what it's worth? Business valuation is not only critical for growing your company, but ultimately its eventual sale. At Miles Wealth Management, they can help you determine the value of your business through a simple yet comprehensive process that doesn't take months and cost thousands of dollars. For many years, Miles has provided you with insurance and financial services. Now they can help you ensure the growth and stability of your business for years to come. Call them today at 845-651-3070 for a free consultation or visit them online at mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located on North Main Street in the Village of Florida. Miles Wealth Management, LLC is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signature Investors Incorporated and any subsidiaries or affiliates.
Hi, this is Marina Case of the Red Shutters in Warwick, New York. Tune in every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. for The Style Show, a show about decorating, fashion, and fun on WTBQ Radio, worth listening to.
Hi, this is Stacey Lawrence of the Greenwood Lake Garden Center here with my co-host,
Kevin Sweeney of the Windermere Agency.
We would love it if you all would join us every Friday from 11 to 12 on WTBQ for Greenwood Lake Radio.
All Greenwood Lake, all the time.
WTBQ. Welcome back once again. This is Jim Mazzetti, and welcome to the American Dream. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11, interviewing the biggest, brightest, and most courageous entrepreneurs of Orange County. And today has been just a wild treat for me. I've always thought about, you know, who I can have on this show, and it's not easy because entrepreneurs, as you can imagine, or businessmen, they're busy each and every day, each and every minute of the day. So today is a huge treat, and Steve, I appreciate you taking the time, actually, out of your busy day to be here with us today.
Well, it's a treat being here, Jim. It's something out of the ordinary for me, and I've enjoyed the experience. So.
It's if you know Steve, he's not the guy. He's not the guy that likes the headlines of the paper or the camera. You've always loved operating from behind.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of your always famous things you used to tell me is I never want to go to court. I want to make sure the deal's done before we get there.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, the court is should be a dispute resolution process. It's not necessarily the most efficient dispute resolution process. People should be able to work things out and have rational conversations about when disputes arise and issues arise, and they will. It's inevitable in a deal. There will be problems. There will be disputes. There will be issues that have to be resolved. But to me, they should be resolved openly, respectfully, and without the need for having to go to court. Unfortunately, some people don't respond to that. And sometimes the only way to resolve disputes is to bring them to a court, and which most courts then still force the people to have respectful conversations and resolve them, because most courts, they'll make the decisions for people, but they rather people settle their own disputes. I think that if you can avoid court, that's the best way.
You know, little memories start popping up in my head when you talk about making sure things are done right. And you know, as Steve has been my attorney for many of my deals in the past. And, you know, one of the things I want to bring up to those listeners and anybody who's thinking about forming a company is the importance of the formation of the company. And I learned through Steve, quite frankly, the importance of having certain caveats in that formation, which helped us be very successful in a matter that we had to deal with. But can you speak to that to a little bit?
Sure. I'm not, and again, it really differs for different deals and for different types of companies. I'm a believer you've got to go and document what you want to do. You may not need to document it in the most formal manner sometimes, most documentation gets pulled out when disputes do arise. To me, contracts need to be kind of living documents because they're the embodiments of relationships. And if, like a relationship, if they don't continue to morph and evolve, then the relationship is probably over. And documents get pulled out when relationships are over and people are holding on to an original expectation or intention about how they wanted to arrange a relationship. You asked about formation, and look, there's a lot of different ways to form an enterprise. And again, I don't want to get technical,
no.
You have to really say, okay, what are people bringing when they're forming an enterprise? What are they trying to accomplish? I know people that go out and they form Delaware C Corps, for example, thinking that they're going to, this is what you need to do because we're going to go public. And when the reality is, that's such a remote possibility for most companies. And frankly, many of the most successful companies would never want to go public anyway. That's why we've been encountering waves of privatization over the last 20 years, where public companies decide they're going to go private.
Right.
There are things that you really can't do. Now, again, in terms of capital raising, you've got to do things that are going to facilitate capital formation. If you have a business that's going to require capital, you have to go and have a vehicle for people to invest in. If you're doing something as a sole proprietor, as an example, well, how do the profits and losses of your sole proprietorship get measured? They're mixed in with your own personal income and your own personal assets, and there's no metrics for an investor to get involved. And again, it's so deal specific, Jim. Sometimes it depends on, tax pass-throughs in a deal. Sometimes it depends on how are people going to get a return? How are they going to get their money out? How are they going to bring in new parties? I know probably one of the most complicated LLC operating agreements I'm working on now is for a company that does in excess of $100 million a year now, with over $10 million in EBITDA, and which is just a measure of earnings for
right.
Listeners don't know. But the company started as a patchwork of entities, and it kept growing and growing and growing, and now they needed to step back and say, whoa, this doesn't really work anymore. So the kind of formation you do, you can anticipate at the beginning, and then, 10 years can go by, 2 years, 5 years can go by, and you say it doesn't really work. Sometimes the thing I've facilitated the most are companies that started one way, and I've done stock swaps to go and put everything together so they could do, because they made a mistake in their formation.
Right.
So, again, this is probably more technical than...
Well, I love the way you did it, because I think that the importance of this conversation, and we can go on for another hour, but we don't have it, is that there is, again, just like being an entrepreneur, there's no set formula. I think the importance of this is, with the advent of LegalZoom and all that fun stuff, you really got to take a hard look. And listen, the cheapest advice I can give you right now is to take that hour or two with a very reputable attorney to flesh out the design. Because trust me, and I'm saying this from past experience, that would be the least expensive thing you've ever invested in, is getting the right information up front.
Sure. People spend a lot of money going to college,
right,
with the idea that they're investing in their education. And, sometimes going and, to use your example, buying an hour of an attorney's time to go and pick their brain is a relatively cheap form of education.
Yeah.
Even if you don't follow their advice. And I encourage all entrepreneurs and all clients to think for themselves and listen to what people have to say and be respectful the way you would be respectful of, a professor in college.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it applies to your situation and your life. I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said that the best investment we can make is to invest in our own education. And if you're going to form a business and you're going to have a business and you're going to have a vehicle to operate your business in, as most entrepreneurs need to, there's very few businesses that really benefit from just being a sole proprietorship, for example.
Very few, yeah.
There are some, but they're very few. And if you're going to be doing that, and this is now going to be the vehicle to go and to drive your business and to set up your business and to hold your business assets and to pass through your profits and losses and to submit, you know, your taxes to the government on the basis of, why wouldn't you want to at least educate yourself on what the consequences of that vehicle mean? And by the same token, if you're going to have a business that's based on certain contractual relationships, why wouldn't you invest the educational opportunity
right.
to go and to learn what it is that the relationship I'm trying to is it flexible enough? What's expected of me? What are my duties? What are my rights and privileges in doing this? And it's not looking at it really from a selfish point of view. It's looking for it from a holistic point of view of what are you trying to accomplish here?
Right.
How best do you get there? You're going to have to take some guesses on how best to get there. You may be wrong and you may have to start over or redo things. And that's true in all businesses. I know a lot of businesses that had dreams and they didn't get it right the first time. They
right.
went back at it and they did it again.
That's an important point, too, I think, for the listeners who are out there. Listen, just because you set something up one way doesn't mean it can't be amended or changed down the road.
No, absolutely.
Right? And it's nothing we do in life is concrete or set in stone forever. And, but the importance, I think, of this part of the conversation is that, you know, you have to set, you want to try and set this tone up front. And if that little investment in yourself, not just, you know, like you said, in self, setting up your corporation right, even if you have to change it down the road,
absolutely.
At least you know it was set up right the first time, and then it can be changed. And you talk about those things when you meet.
Well, and as you know from personal experience with me, what I tend to do is I'll look at, okay, how can I go and continue to grow this? Where is it going? How can I amend it? If this doesn't work out,
right.
Or if I find we need more capital, we have to raise more money, or I find out I need to bring other people involved that are going to need to take a piece of equity in a deal, because those are all ongoing decisions that businesses have to confront as they grow. I mean, people forget that even great entrepreneurs like a Bill Gates didn't stay as a CEO of their own company forever.
That's right.
And knowing that up front, and that's partly an evaluation of what are you good at? What do you like doing? And I think that's one of the great entrepreneurial weaknesses, because too many entrepreneurs, you know, because you have to start out doing everything. You are the person who is handling the books. You're the person who may be handling the manufacturing. You may be the person who's handling taking out the garbage, you know, purchasing,
yeah.
You know, handling supply chains and whatnot. You forget that you reach a point in your scale of the growth of the company that it's important to bring in people that know more than you do about those areas. And, going and creating vehicles that facilitate that down the road, I think is an important part of the process.
That's key. Listen, with that, Steve, I want to make sure I thank you again for taking your time today.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
I told you this hour would go by in like 5 seconds.
And you were right.
It's been my pleasure to have Steve Spiegel here from Spiegel Legal. This is Jim Mazzetti with The American Dream. Remember, we are here every Tuesday from 10 to 11. And if you'd like to be on the show and you have a story to share with us, and hopefully, the idea that's behind this is to inspire others and educate them at the same time. If you're an entrepreneur or an entrepreneur in the waiting or you're currently in business, the idea here is to get some good information and make it your own. There's, like we said, there's no textbook for this, but there's certainly great ways to get information out there and utilize it for your best interest, and don't be afraid to go get it.
Right, and there are best practices in this area, as there are in all other areas. You can learn from what other people have done and the mistakes that they've made in
right.
the past.
Okay, then. This is Jim Mazzetti. We'll see you next week. Thanks again, and God bless.